I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and this is Marketplace Weekend.
For the past month, producer Eliza Mills and I have been working with our partners at Frontline and the PBS NewsHour to look at student debt. 42 million Americans owe educational debt, some $1.3 trillion of it. You've probably heard the presidential candidates talk about debt-free college or loan forgiveness. This first story is about a generation of students for whom those campaign trail promises might come too late. The ones who graduated into the worst of the recession. Now that the economy is recovering, are they? If everything had gone according to his plan, Chris Savelle would be a Wall Street trader right now, not biking through downtown Detroit. Sure, he likes being out here, part of a weekly community ride called Slow Roll. Not far from the suburb where he lives. But Chris graduated from Central Michigan University right into the recession.
December 2008.
After 6 months of looking for a finance job, he became a manager at Walmart.
We used to make jokes in that store because it was one of the most well-qualified Walmart stores I think we've ever seen. The number of laid-off engineers was amazing.
Chris lives with his mom and sister now. After 9 months at Walmart, he got lucky and landed a job in supply chain management. It's not Wall Street, but he likes it and makes $85,000 a year. That covers rent, a little bit of savings, and the $1,000 a month he pays toward his $100,000 in student loans.
It sucks. To put it simple, it sucks.
Chris is an outlier. The average student loan burden is around $37,000. He's also a study in what happened to a generation that figured the economy would be fine, the housing market wouldn't crash, and somehow they'd make it work. Then, of course, everything cratered.
I did this to myself. I knew when I was taking out these loans that I was building up a bigger and bigger debt burden, but told myself, oh, you know, I'll have a good job when I get out of college, so on and so forth.
For Chris and other students his age, the price of college shot up. Since 2000, the cost of going to a public university is up 54%. In Chris Savelle's case, one credit hour at Central Michigan cost $148 when he started school. When he finished, more than 5 years later, the same credit cost $324.
The major thing driving that increase is that states used to fund public higher education.
That's Sarah Goldrick-Robb. She's a professor at Temple University and studies the price of higher ed.
They withdrew some of their support. And in doing so, somebody has to pick up that tab. And they basically decided that the people going to college and their families should pay for that.
Meanwhile, middle-class incomes barely budged, which means a family today spends a much larger share of its wealth on paying for college than one a generation ago.
The big change over time is that loans, taking loans, used to be much more of a choice. You could do it or not do it and figure out a way to make ends meet.
And many students have.
They don't like repaying their debts, but they're fine.
That's Sandy Baum from the Urban Institute.
Their earnings premium from going to college is far higher than is necessary to pay back those loans.
Even Chris Savelle is glad he has a degree. But for him and many people who graduated into the teeth of the recession, student debt essentially put the start of their adult lives on hold.
They're not renting apartments, they're not purchasing cars, they're not starting businesses. I mean, they're not really starting their lives.
Lisa Madigan is the Illinois Attorney General. Her office is pushing servicers, the people who collect payments on behalf of the government or commercial lenders, to put borrowers into repayment plans based on their incomes so that the rest of their lives become more manageable.
The people who are most impacted are low-income, African-American, Latino families who finally put a child, put their family through college, and now seemingly are stuck with this lifetime of debt that even if the parents and grandparents try to help, they can't seem to ever make the payments.
Worries about making loan payments have changed the way the next generation thinks about college. Chris Savelle's little sister Katie is terrified of debt. She's 19, did one semester in college, didn't really like it, and immediately repaid her debt with money from her job at a bakery. She's not in school now, over her mother's objections. Her brother's experience just scared her too much.
I do not want to end up in the same sort of financial issues that I've seen all these people so close to me have to go through.
Instead, she's now looking at cheaper one-year programs that would give her the skills to work in the film industry.
I would like to go to a technical school that would give me a certificate, somewhere like the Motion Picture Institute. I was looking into a program like that, it's very hands-on and it's a full-year course, and they want like $13,000.
And maybe that is the lasting legacy of Chris Savelle's generation of debtors. More and more students around the country asking whether a traditional college education has become too much of a risk. We just heard from Chris and Katie Savelle about how student loan debt is affecting their lives. But there's another member of the Savelle household who's been rocked by Chris's debt. His mother, Jan.
In my family, we really believe in education. We never had any other expectation except that they would go to college.
That expectation has been shattered.
It's really frustrating. I feel bad for Chris that he's supporting me and supporting Katie and having to carry that debt load because I can't get a full-time job. And to me, watching Katie, to me, she's throwing her life away. She is such a bright girl. I mean, this is a girl who, when they do testing, she is gifted. She's so incredibly brilliant. And to see her not pursuing education because she doesn't want to take on that debt. I've tried to tell her that a small liberal arts school would probably be better for her. It would fit her personality better. But they also tend to be much more expensive. She tried the big state school, and she just could not fit in. She just saw the whole thing as a big waste, and she could see the student loan debt going to rack up over the years to come, because even though she got a lot of financial aid for her freshman year, typically with most schools, that gets cut back. We saw what her financial aid package would be for her sophomore year, and it was already substantially reduced. So you know that the loans you're taking out just get bigger and bigger. I don't know what Katie's plans are. She's not even quite 19 yet. But I just see the more they get saddled with that kind of debt, how it impacts their future. She had about $5,000, $6,000 in student debt for her freshman year, and she didn't even want that hanging over her head. She works part-time, and she put almost every penny into paying off that loan. And she has got that one paid off. And she said, I don't want to be in debt like that. It scares me half to death. You can't go out and buy a car. You can't get a house. You can't do a lot of the things you want to do because that student loan debt is hanging over you. You are stuck with that forever. It goes to the grave with you.
If Chris Savelle is slogging through $100,000 in debt and slowly recovering, well, that same amount can be pretty different in another family. We drove an hour outside Chicago to the town of Crystal Lake, where Jordan Heft lives with his parents. Unlike Chris, who's supporting his mother and sister, Jordan, who's 31, lives at home to save money on rent. He also has $100,000 in debt. He went to Columbia College to study film, couldn't get a job in the film industry, and now works in a grocery store. The Hefts welcomed us into their home for dinner of roasted veggies and grilled chicken.
I got raspberry iced tea, ginger ale, water pop.
We sat down to eat, and the Hefts got to talking about Jordan's loans.
We don't expect any of our children to not pay their debt. They have to be responsible for what they chose to do. Mm-hmm. But it's the interest is so high. And he's only able to make interest-only payments because the interest is so high.
Yeah.
And so I said, you're never going to pay it off.
It was just lower interest and just lower payments. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. But.
And he's stuck, too, because he can't really leave the job that has insurance now to go pursue what he went to college for.
What he pays, he can't afford a rent, a car payment.
I've had some of my friends in college or from college say, we shouldn't have to pay any of that back. I'm like, no, it was money that was given to you. You have to pay it back, but it should be at a reasonable time and a reasonable rate.
Melody and I did not go to college. So I call it college illiterate. Mm-hmm. We didn't know. And I think the schools, I think the colleges a little bit have to be held accountable too. I mean, somewhere along the line they have to say, listen, you're going to come here, this is what it's going to be. When you walk out, you better be ready to get a job, because in 6 months, guess what?
Well, they made it look like there was, you're going to get a job right out of college. It'll be great. Well,
did you feel like the college was advising you? Were like, whose interest did you think they were acting
totally,
in?
Totally, I think
there's the college.
Yeah.
At the time, did you feel that way?
No. At that time, we thought, oh my goodness, he's going to end up in Hollywood.
And I don't know if the economy was part to blame too, because it's when the economy went bad. And really, we should have just cut our losses and said, do something else.
Right. I mean, he has no regrets, so that part's...
And I've always said if I could go back, I would still go to college. I would not do it as an experience I enjoyed, and it's just, I would have done it more smartly.
Well, you have said you would have gone to junior college, and you get a certification for something,
and if you didn't do it, you could be sitting in that same chair going, I wish I would have just gone to college.
When you look at student debt around the country, the good news is that defaults are falling as the economy improves. But there is one group that defaults more than any other: students who go or went to for-profit colleges. New data from the Department of Education shows those students account for 35% of defaults in the last 3 years. So why is this happening? I went to talk to some borrowers to find out. I met up with Stephen Trimble at a juice bar in downtown Philadelphia with kind of amusingly named drinks.
I get a key lime pie, and I will have a spa treatment.
I was there to talk to him about the $30,000 in loans he took out to go to the University of Phoenix back in 2000 when he was 27.
You know, the University of Phoenix at that time was kind of a new phenomenon, and I'd seen, you know, television commercials and heard radio commercials, and I thought, hey, the format sounded amazing.
He went to study business management, but after 3 years, felt he wasn't really learning anything and dropped out.
When I did think about it, I felt a little bit ashamed for quitting and not seeing it through. But then I thought about the school itself and what that degree was probably going to be worth, which is bupkis, in my opinion.
Trimble has a good job as a corporate writer now and has made a pretty decent dent in his debt, getting the balance down to $17,000.
It feels like an anchor. It feels like a cloud.
At one point, his wages were garnished. His credit is pretty much destroyed.
My father helped me buy a car 3 years ago. In fact, he bought the car, and I make the payments at a 6.9% interest rate. If I had bought the car, it would be an 18.9% interest rate. I can't get a credit card without more than like a $500 limit on my own. I couldn't get a mortgage. My house is in my wife's name.
Borrowers at for-profits not only default more frequently, but they're also often from lower-income families who can't help out, or might be a little older, like Stephen, or have kids, or have a lot of other things on their plates.
The problem is that we have too many people borrowing to go to institutions and programs that we know in advance are not going to serve them well. That's a crisis.
That's Sandy Baum, who studies debt at the Urban Institute, and says a lot of these schools used aggressive marketing to draw students in.
Some of these big publicly held companies, they grew dramatically, and they signed up all kinds of people who had no idea what they were getting into.
That's now made worse because schools like ITT Tech and Corinthian have since collapsed, leaving thousands of students with ruined credit and potentially piles of debt. Jen Smith knows what that's like. She's the first person in her family to go to college. She's 31 and went to the for-profit International Academy of Design and Technology in Chicago. She left after a year and a half. IADT's parent company has since closed several campuses. When Smith went back to school to get her nursing degree, she found out the credit she earned there didn't count.
I didn't know that those credits would be worthless. I mean, I would have never. Who would sign up for something like that?
By the time she went back to get her nursing degree, her original $27,000 loan had ballooned to $45,000. Smith works in HR while studying, and she's almost relentlessly upbeat.
No one's going to drop $100,000 in my lap, nor do I expect them to. So really all you can do is just one day at a time.
student loan debt doesn't go away if you declare bankruptcy. Coincidentally, for Jen Smith, nursing might be a career that could make her eligible for some loan forgiveness. Almost all student debt is owned or guaranteed by the federal government. In 2010, the government took over making federal loans. They also work with servicers, companies who collect payments and process loans. And servicers will make about $2 billion in commission from the Department of Education this year. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau monitors complaints about those servicers, like these: poor customer service, unexpected delays, lost paperwork, and inconsistent processing. Those come from a report by the CFPB's student loan ombudsman, Seth Frotman. I asked him why servicers who make billions from taxpayer dollars are allowed to act like this.
Congress has created a provision where every borrower has the ability to make affordable repayments. You know, we pay servicers a whole lot of money, and that is more than just to kind of take a paycheck from borrowers who are doing well. You know, we expect them, when borrowers reach out who are struggling, to ensure they know about these plans and get enrolled in these plans. You know, there are supposed to be protections for all of these borrowers who thought they were doing the right thing by going to school, taking on this historic level of debt, and the promise kind of was, you'll never really have to pay more than you can afford. And the very companies that are supposed to be ensuring that that is the case now have essentially failed these borrowers for a second time. One of the things that the Bureau has been working hard through public enforcement actions, through the first ever federal oversight of these entities, is ensuring that illegal practices will no longer be tolerated.
But I'm just not talking about illegal practices. I'm talking about all this kind of mushy stuff that gets in the way. Who is supposed to be saying, no, don't do that?
You know, I think the Department of Education obviously oversees the contracts with these entities. And I think one of the things you saw as part of their announcement was kind of a real concerted effort to kind of show what they expect in the future. We have said, you know,
2019.
You know, we expect servicers who have an interest with complying with the law that a lot of those provisions are expected of them now.
It seems to me that it's kind of a Wild West for servicers, that there really aren't that many rules they have to follow at all.
The challenge that we face in this space is that when a market essentially doubles over a very short time, like we saw in the student loan context, the question is, have the regulators, have the people overseeing the market, have the rules kept up? In this case, you know, they haven't. I think we have seen a lack of consistency across the marketplace. You know,
so that sounds like a yes.
Yes. And I think, you know, the only thing I would add is the Bureau has new tools at its disposal. So, you know, if we find that a company's practices are unfair, deceptive, or abusive, we have the ability to take action. But I think in terms of consistent rules that we see in credit cards or mortgages, I think this is a market that, you know, is sorely lacking those.
Marketplace and the PBS NewsHour reached out to the Department of Education about loan servicing. They declined to comment before we recorded this show.